another Krig podcast. Krig, the Common Repository Information Group, is funded by the Joint Information Systems Committee. This next Krigcast you're about to listen to is on identity within repositories, that is, authorization and authentication.
Hi, I'm Nev, I'm the new one. Welcome to the podcast, everybody. First of all, I think we'll go around and introduce ourselves to each other. I'm Jim Downing. I'm the co-chair of the Krig Working Group. I don't have any particular expertise in identity, but it touches on a lot of the technologies and systems that I have been developing over the last few years in vSpace and on the Spectra and Spectra 2 projects. So, do we have Riss here? He's in a boat, wasn't he? Okay. And is Josh in the room, please?
Yeah, Josh is here.
Could you introduce yourself, please? Hi, Josh.
Yeah, sure. My name is Josh Howlett. I work for Janet UK. My principal role is as Janet's technical specialist on the UK Federation.
Okay, great. Is Henry Hughes here?
Hi there, Jim. I'm here.
Hi. Could you introduce yourself, please?
Sure. My name is Henry Hughes. I also work for Janet UK. Have responsibility for looking after the development work that's going on and the main services here in the Federation space.
Great. Hi, Simon. Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi. Could you introduce yourself, thanks?
I'm Simon McLeish. I've been working on GIST funded projects at the LSC for pretty much the whole of the last decade, including quite a few to do with Shibboleth and identity management generally.
Okay, great. And do we have Paul? Is Paul here?
Hi, yes, Paul Walker here.
Hi.
I'm at UConn, University of Bath. UConn has quite a serious investment in R&D in the repository space. I have a particular interest in the lighter weight personal identity management, particularly OpenID and how it might pertain to some of the things that we're going to talk about. And I have a background prior to UConn in HE, enterprise system integration and e-learning system development.
Great. How about to kick off? In our last kind of pre-chat, Simon gave an introduction to the FAR project, and I think that might be an interesting place to start again. If you could give us a rundown of what FAR's going to be doing and what it's been doing in the week since we spoke last.
Right. The FAR project is investigating how best to use federated access management in repositories. Basically, looking at how we could go beyond the fairly naive situation we have where software like Shibboleth and federated access management in general is just used to gain access, and you're either in or you're out, and there aren't, there isn't much that's done other than that. And in particular, in repositories, you tend to be able to get in, and then have to the repository database is used to do all of the access management beyond that point to determine it determines who you are from your Shibboleth login, and uses that and its own information to work out what you're allowed to do in the repository, whether that's depositing or facilitating parts of the workflow or whatever it might happen to be that you're allowed to do. And so we're going to, at the moment, we're aiming to have a sort of two-pronged approach, which is to look at lots of use cases, or as many as we can gather or invent, that have some access management component, and see what you would need to do to be able to use the attributes that software like Shibboleth provides to do that. And at the other end, to look at the code for vSpace and vPrints and see where access management decisions are made, and see make similar decisions about what can actually be done with attributes to do that, and then The aim is to combine the two to come up with a prioritized list of what sorts of things we can actually try and test and see whether we can get the software to recognize with attributes. We don't really feel that in the wild you will be able to, or you would want to necessarily do everything that is possible using attributes. But we'd like to make it possible to do as much as you would like and then to leave the rest to the internal database of the repository.
Are you confining yourself to Shibboleth for the purposes of this?
Yes. Well, we've only got 9 months.
Yeah.
So we're confining ourselves to Shibboleth. We're going to be working with the 2.0 version of Shibboleth to make sure that we can get something that's as long-lived as possible, at least.
Yeah.
That's what we hope. And we're also not looking at Fedora because we haven't got funding to do that. We couldn't find a partner in the time we had available. So, we're basically combining ourselves to do DSpace and eprints on the repository side as well.
Right.
Okay, you mentioned that in the use cases you're considering, you won't be able to do everything with attributes. I was wondering if you had a feeling yet of what kind of tasks were attributes kind of access management tasks and which were user principle driven
authorization. Well, it's not that we feel that you can't. It's just that the problem is that if you want to use attributes, then you have to be able to get the attributes. So that means that somebody has to populate a database with them. And we don't think that most people are doing things that are that advanced with attribute management yet. Tools like Signet, for example, from Internet 2, would make it possible to manage groups of users and what permissions they have and then translate those into Shibboleth attributes, or attributes that can be made available through Shibboleth, to be more precise. And so that's the sort of thing that we would be thinking of in the future. But if you're in a position as an institution that you can't supply a particular attribute, we wouldn't want to make a shibbolized version of DSpace that then locks you out because you haven't got an attribute that describes what your particular involvement is with a particular piece of workflow, because that just isn't stored in your database and there is no way that you can store that. If you're a repository manager, you may well not have the technical context to easily add new attributes to an institution's LDAP database. So it's not so much the technical, there isn't a sort of a technical or a use case kind of reason why you wouldn't want to do it. It's more that the situation, we have to be pragmatic, and the situation is that it's just not going to be possible for many institutions to do this at the moment.
Right. I wonder if Josh or Henry could kind of give us continue on from there and give us an overview of where attribute management and access management with attributes is going in the UK at the moment, and especially with Shibboleth against or with Athens DA, and what the situation is there.
Henry, do you want me to field that one?
Yeah, yours, Josh.
Yeah, I think it's probably accurate to say that in general we don't have a great deal of visibility into what institutions are doing with their attribute stores. As far as we're concerned, to a large extent, that's kind of behind the Federation interface, which they present to the rest of the world. And I suppose, anecdotally, we pick up bits and pieces of information about what institutions are doing with their databases, their directories, and how attributes are represented within those, and how they expose that information to their identity provider software. But we don't, in general, this isn't something that we go out of our way to get a good handle on, really, just because it's not really part of the federated access management problem. well, it's not part of our problem anyway. Obviously, if you're an institution, then you do care very much about how you structure these things internally and how you go about representing them and pushing them around your systems. But as far as we're concerned, it doesn't really impinge very much on what we do. We don't really even go as far as to provide much in the way of guidance or recommendations on how institutions should go about managing attributes. There are rough best practices and these sorts of things, and a recent GIST project, the Identity Project, has a lot of interesting recommendations and outputs concerning the management of attributes within institutions, and that's well worth a look at. That's probably about as much as I can sort of generalize about that particular question.
Seems to me this is an interesting space, though, for that reason, which is that repositories are going to have this public facing need for some level of attribute recognition, if we go down this route at least. But they also represent, they will represent, a growing number of integrations with internal enterprise systems, which will have their own attribute requirements, own attribute stores, and from my own experience, quite different ways of implementing these between systems, and not necessarily a great deal of actual coherence between them within the institution or the enterprise. So I think what the repository actually represents quite a challenging space where these two worlds are going to have to find a way to get along.
Presumably the issues of getting them to get along are largely political rather than technical, or is there a technical aspect?
I think I wouldn't say they're political, they're more business, I suppose, in the sense that a lot of decisions made within the enterprise are driven by, often they're driven just simply by commercial vendors and what it is that they offer. The amount of investment needed to really get on top of attribute management and just simply user account management within some institutions is daunting. A lot of institutions just haven't even really tried to go down that road yet. So I think that there are just a number of business differences there, whereas the business drivers to get on top of this to some degree in order to participate in the Access Management Federation, for example, mean that you just have to deal with it. So I think there's even a case for saying that these are quite often two different groups of people within the institution dealing with the two different problems. Maybe that they're not even necessarily talking to each other very much yet. Certainly in my experience, we had the library and web services talking to EduServe, for example, regarding Athens DA. And then we just had our MIS people talking to each other about how they were going to try and do single sign-on between some of the larger internal-facing systems. And this was only 18 months ago. So I think it's going to be interesting. It might be repositories which really sort of get the wedge in there and start to force some of these issues.
And do you think that's the way it will happen, that repositories will try and take everybody forward together into more advanced attribute usage, or do you think it will fragment and you'll have one side using more advanced attributes and then a kind of a least common denominator side for integrating internally with business systems?
Well, I think inevitably there will be those two ends of the spectrum, and I think a lot of institutions won't necessarily take their repositories into sort of complex workflows within the institution straight away. A number of repositories will probably be very simple. They'll be completely open access in terms of accessing the content for read, and then just use whatever software is bundled with the repository software to actually manage that in a fairly unconnected way. And I can imagine many institutions will probably carry on like that for a while. But I think that the more those institutions that are more inclined to look at integration, that have already perhaps done some integration between virtual learning environments and student record systems, for example. We know a little bit about identity of people within the institution and roles and permissions and so forth. We'll perhaps immediately see a need to start to actually engage with that kind of integration. And I think we'll probably see a spectrum between those two polar opposites, really.
Okay. All of this requires some concept of identity. I was wondering if Paul could start to move us by maybe giving us an idea of how OpenID might fit into all of this, and whether it fits into an attribute access management world, or whether it's something else entirely.
Well, this is the million-dollar question I've been wrestling with for a little while. Certainly, OpenID gives some possibilities for attribute exchange. I think the thing to try to do is to look for the use cases where the things which are interesting about OpenID and the things which are useful about it might actually be, as it were, leveraged in this in the world of repositories. So one of them is clearly the burden of management of identity is taken away from the institution. It's also something which, while being managed by the individual person, might be something that they actually bring with them to the institution and take with them when they leave. So there are all kinds of interesting aspects of how it might fit with perhaps lifelong learning and so forth. So there are sort of business drivers for at least considering OpenID. In terms of specifically how it might serve repositories, well, one interesting notion that's been floated more than once is the problem of the authoritative names within repository systems, or within all kinds of systems, in fact, but the problem of finding a way of uniformly being able to recognize that a named person within that system is who they are, who they say they are, or is consistently represented, at least. And obviously this is important in repositories of scholarly works and citations and so forth. And certainly there's an interesting notion that that problem, which has so far been fairly intractable, might be solved by simply giving the problem to the person who wants to be authoritatively named to actually manage. So they manage their own unique identifier, and that gets used in these systems to identify them. So in a sense, it's I think some of the things which are interesting about OpenID have actually very little to do with security or even access control. They're actually very much more to do with identification or identity. But in terms of how it might play a role in the federated access model, certainly something like OpenID can be used as the sort of initial interface for the user engaging with such a system, but I don't think it's particularly important in that area. I think it's much more interesting as a new technology that gives the person a representation on the web and in these systems. Sorry, that was quite a ramble, so I don't know if anyone wants to pick up on any of that.
I've got a couple of things. The first is that, as you must be aware, that the Shibboleth community has tended to be rather dismissive of OpenID for the specific reason that it's actually the sort of other side of one of the things that you said was a good thing about it, that you can manage your own identity.
Yes.
And the problem that Shibboleth community feels there is that this isn't something that is then, this means that the identity is not something which is backed up by the authority of the institution. So it can be quite hard to know that the person with a particular OpenID is A, affiliated to a particular institution, even if they say they are, and B, that the institution hasn't thrown them out
and that they're still claiming to be.
Yes, I think that the people who are interested in federated access management rightly point to that problem. There are actual simple workarounds to that problem in the sense that the identity provider of an open ID can be a trusted organization. So your university can issue you with an open ID, for example. And then it's the identity provider, the trust relationship exists between the service provider and the identity provider. Now, open ID doesn't strongly support that kind of arrangement because, frankly, that's not the problem it's trying to solve. Really, I think that open ID what I'm saying is that a federated access system doesn't preclude using open ID, but I don't think, by the same token, open ID is a particularly good mechanism for really engaging with federated access control. It's solving a different problem. The other thing that every discussion that I've been involved in practically about OpenID has at some point got slightly bogged down in the issue of its actual, the actual OpenID specifications and the implementation's level of security. And as I've said before, I think that security is exaggerated as a feature of OpenID or as a use case for it even. It has other interesting qualities and other interesting possibilities. So when the federated access management people are a bit leery of it, I frankly sympathize and I understand, but I don't think that's necessarily quite the issue.
Fair enough. I agree that it's not the thing that OpenID is designed to do, but that is clearly seen as an issue, and in some use cases, obviously, will be an issue. The other thing I was going to say is that in the wiki that we use for the LSE projects team, we actually provide access to people using Shibboleth via OpenID-based identity providers.
Okay.
But we only do that, this is access on a to restricted material that is generated mainly during the lifetime of projects before it's made public at the end of the project.
Right.
We don't just open the whole thing to anybody from these particular service providers, but we require that we're informed of the user's identity by some other method so that we know who they are. We know who they are beyond just the Shibboleth transaction, so we know that that ID matches up with the person that we know.
Oh, absolutely. I'm afraid I don't recall which university it was in the States, but I read about this some time ago where they weren't talking about OpenID particularly, but they were talking about how they provision their users, their students, with accounts, IDs, you know, usernames, so forth. And they make an actual ceremony out of it. They physically turn up and are physically handed a piece of paper, and they physically prove who they, you know, they say they are with whatever, their social security card or some such. So there are all kinds of mechanisms that can be layered on top of this to actually tie the human agent, as it were, with this identifier in a more trusted and robust way. That can certainly be done. So in a nutshell, the user can come in and prove that they own this identity and that it represents them the next time they log in. That's absolutely fine. But again, I think, you know, you'd have to really just look at what savings you're making there, what advantages you're creating. There's the single sign-on, or at least the single credentials kind of argument for the user. The user's benefit is that they have to remember fewer tokens or whatever it is that they're using to authenticate. That's one aspect. The aspect of them being able to carry this identity for much longer and not arbitrarily being given one by an institution is another. But actually there are some interesting counter-arguments for suggesting that institutions should issue their students with identities, even open ID.
Revocation is the main issue there, isn't it?
Yes.
The institution may want to take that identity away.
Exactly.
For some reason.
Yes. Yeah, so that would bring us back to attributes and things as well, wouldn't it? I mean, there are other methods for, really we're talking about authorization there rather than authentication, but yes, point taken.
Yeah, the main reason we were doing this is to make it possible in a world where not everybody has access to a Shibboleth identity provider, but everybody who wants to use our systems has access to the web and can therefore set themselves up an OpenID.
Yes.
Is able to access the system that we've used Shibboleth as a an access guard.
Yes, and of course another aspect of OpenID is the, which I find interesting, is the ability to delegate. So I have an OpenID which is the URL of my personal blog, but my actual, I'm not running identity provision software myself, and that's actually delegating back to, in fact, I can't even remember now, whichever OpenID identity provider I happened to choose when I was doing this. The point being that if they go under or I don't like them anymore, I can switch very easily to another identity provider.
You can remember that it's the one that you didn't like that's gone under?
Indeed. But that does rather break the notion of the trusted identity provider, which has been floated as a workaround for some of these trust issues. And of course, delegation is actually requires a certain amount of technical know-how to achieve at the moment. So it's not necessarily it loses those advantages of the fact that anybody can get an OpenID if they know how to use a web browser currently. But it would be interesting to play with some of these approaches.
So, kind of a fundamental question that kind of came into my mind while I was listening to this one of the big advantages of OpenID is that it allows users to manage their own identity. Is this really something that users in HE actually want?
I'm not sure if we know yet. I was actually, strangely, I think there's been a slight misunderstanding in the sense that I was suggesting it was an advantage to the institution that they divest themselves of the overhead of having to manage identity for their users, which is actually a considerable overhead, I know from experience, rather than it be a advantage to the user. I did also talk about the lifelong learning sort of notion of the long-term identity, so which is clearly more of an advantage for the user. But the institution has a real problem provisioning identities for users. I can talk about my own experiences at a London university where we would create an account in various systems for applicants before they'd even joined the university so that they could have access to the VLE and so forth. And there were very good reasons for doing this. The problem is that a large number of applicants don't eventually come to your institution, so you're creating a lot of identities that you don't then need to actually use. And in fact, you want to go through and do a good deal of caretaking work to remove those identities thereafter. And that's all expensive stuff. That takes time. It's surprisingly difficult to do accurately and reliably. The business arrangements around that can be really complex. You know, we have people who would tell us they weren't going to turn up because they'd accepted something else and then changed their mind after we'd destroyed their identity and so forth. And a lot of those problems would be, to some degree, ameliorated by the user simply supplying their own identity, or their own identifier, at least.
But presumably they come straight back if the institution is providing trust for those identities.
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Presumably that problem comes back if you think of the institution providing trust and authenticity for the identities.
Yes, absolutely.
One of the things that we found in the identity project is that institutions know that they spend a lot of time and effort doing identity management, but they have no actual reliable measures of how much time and effort that actually involves.
I can believe that.
And they just tend to sort of get somebody in IT services or wherever to go away and do the job and come back when it's done. And
yes,
they don't count how much overtime they're not paying them to do.
Yes. But I think that could be probably true of a number of long-standing IT department responsibilities, you know, backing up data is another one. It's just something that kind of happens. Was that somebody else joining? Or?
I don't think so. Somebody is nothing. So one of the things that certainly influenced in the work on the SWORD, the Project APM, was the problem that arises when you have a system authenticating on behalf of somebody.
Right.
Whether you can pass through the authentication, whether you have delegated authentication that way.
Yes.
So I'm very interested in both attribute-based systems, because then you can have, because then you can authenticate the system through attributes, and also any system which allows them to pass a user principle through and have the repository at the far end be able to trust it.
So this is essentially where two different APIs need to collaborate to serve a user.
That's right, without the user necessarily being present.
Yes. Well, there's the, is it OAuth initiative, which I think is related to the OpenID. Some of the same people are involved, I think, which is attempting to do something like this. Sorry, I'm going to look this up on my web browser as we talk.
There's also a Shibboleth profile, which I can't remember how current it actually is at the moment. But, it's mainly concentrating on portal-based use cases,
yeah,
where the portal will want to get access to other things on behalf of a user who may or may not currently be
able to. Simon, are you referring to Scott's constrained delegation profile?
Yeah.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, Scott wrote that as a demonstration of the fact that this is something that people in general don't want to do.
Yeah, I know. He tends to.
So it was sort of a demonstration of the fact that this is actually really quite difficult, and you don't want to do it, guys. Sort of thing. Because it constrains.
It doesn't actually stop people wanting to do it, however.
It doesn't. This is true. People, however, want to do all sorts of strange things. And that's not necessarily to say whether they're right in wanting to do them or not.
And certainly on SWORD, the only thing we were really able to do was assert a user principle for the user and expect the system at the far end to deal with authenticating the principle later.
Mm.
Because there wasn't a single standard we could ensure to pass through a token or whatever. I was wondering about Paul was talking about, and Simon was talking about how OpenID and Federated Access Management aren't particularly natural fit or particularly desirable fit. Does Shibboleth or Athens DA have this idea of an identity management standard separate from the attributes? Or is it something that it lacks, and is that why OpenID is being posited in there?
Well, I think in some ways Athens DA actually anonymized so thoroughly that any notion of identity was, other than a sort of functional identifier for the system, was lost, really. So I think it was actually almost working in the opposite direction. Shibboleth, I confess, I know less about the nuts and bolts of. So.
I'm not quite sure I follow what your question is asking. Sorry. Otherwise, I might be able to answer it about Shibboleth.
I was just wondering whether Shibboleth had a system whereby, a standard whereby users were able to manage their own attributes into the Shibboleth system, or was it all assuming that
not exactly part of Shibboleth, but there is a plug-in system, a sort of separate piece of software called Sharpie, which is which manages attributes on behalf of users and basically gives users the choice to release attributes or not, and will warn them that they need to release certain attributes if they want a certain level of access to a particular resource.
And that's perhaps better known by the name of the web front end it has, which is called Autograph. And one of the other projects at the LSE at the moment, it's also just started, is called Flame, and that's actually looking at how users might want to use Autograph or an equivalent. We haven't actually finalized that Autograph will be the choice of tool. And do some sociological study of, you know, what users want to do with it, how users can be educated into using it wisely, because the temptation for users seems to be that they either get worried about security and deny everything and therefore can't get anywhere, or they just want to be able to use things without worrying about it, so they allow everything and they let out attributes that they don't want to be let out.
Yeah, this is a strong case against personal identity management, which does need to be addressed at some stage. Exactly that point, just because people will luxuriate in the ability to manage their own identities doesn't mean that they're going to do so in any kind of serious or useful way.
But look, if you look at MySpace, to pick a notorious example, the way that people manage their information on their personal information on MySpace is absolutely appallingly insecure in many cases.
Okay, this is all leading into a Krieg event next week, and also an ongoing process of Krieg interoperability activities. What do you think we'd be trying to achieve with identity in the repository space, particularly? What do you think we could achieve in the short or mid-term? And kind of what's the most important thing we need to think about or start to do? If that's not too difficult a question to answer.
I think I'd like to see us keep half an eye on the fact that identity is important within the content, within the repositories, as well as relating to the sort of human agents who are accessing this system. So that the person logging in or engaged in the workflow has an identity, but so does the author of the scholarly work or the person who's being cited, for example. And I think these two are not by any means necessarily going to be solved with the same technology or the same approaches, but I think that they are both aspects of identity in repositories, which needs to be examined and solved to some degree.
That's interesting. Do you think something like Friends of a Friend, along with OpenID, could provide a standard for that, or
possibly? Certainly, there are people looking at that, exactly that approach. I think it's interesting because the concepts seem fairly simple until you really sit down and try to sort of follow them through, and then it becomes clear that there are very subtle issues to do with authority and trust, which are not precluded. I think it's not proven that they're precluded by things like OpenID and FOF, but it's not really been demonstrated that it works yet either. And so there are other initiatives to provide authoritative name services within the, certainly for repositories, and it remains to be seen which one works. But it's an attractive idea, nonetheless, that a person might be allowed to manage their own identifier globally. And I think it's perhaps an idea that we should be seeking to reject first, as it were, before we move into building more constrained and managed systems. That stopped you, didn't it?
Does anyone else want to speak to kind of priorities for identity in repository at all? Or bring up something completely new?
I might jump in here, actually, Jim, and ask because Simon kind of intrigued me. And maybe we go a bit tech-heavy here and talk a little bit about you know, what it's going to, I don't know if Simon, you've actually looked at DSpace or eprints and what kind of technical development it will require to actually progress this into a place where attributes might be you know, a separate service from it and then integrated with it, or if it's just a matter of a plug-in for the systems themselves?
Well, we haven't yet. We need to get on with it and decide what we're going to do, but I think what we want to do is look at what the code already does before we make a decision, which we haven't really got started on yet.
Jim, from your experiences, I mean, what does DSpace look like?
Unless it's changed massively, or going to change massively in the 1.6 version, I believe that there is an assumption in DSpace that there is an authenticated user, and that there is a user principle, and then you authorize against the user principle. So it could be fairly fundamental to kind of rejig the authorization layer so that it doesn't require that.
Yeah. Paul, have you had much chance to look at Fedora at all and what they're doing with Xacmol?
No, I'm afraid not. I have some experience with XACML, but not with Fedora. I think there in the last year or two, there have been some doubts expressed about how manageable Xacmol actually is in the long term. So I'm now even dubious about Xacmol itself, frankly, as a solution to these sorts of problems. But as far as I know, it's still perhaps the only game in town, so that might be the obvious thing to look at least in the short, medium term.
Has anyone else had a look yet, kind of around the call? Yes, no, anybody had a look at it or even care about it? Henry, I'll pick on you.
No, it's not something I've looked at.
Jim?
No, but I was wondering if you could go into the limitations of Xacmol a little more. It's something like I've been interested in but haven't dug into myself. Why is it not going to do the job, and why are you skeptical?
Well, my own experience is that it did work for the job I used it for, which was a couple of years ago to try to integrate several MIS systems with their own attribute stores. The advantage we had at the time was that our policies were really simple because we were pioneering it really within the institution, so no one had a chance to write any difficult policies to constrain us. What I'm reading or have read, and I'm certainly not necessarily that up to date with this stuff anymore because it's not what I do for a living anymore, but what I have been reading casually is that people are finding as the policies become more complex that it just becomes impossible to manage and merge different Xacmol documents together into some sort of coherent artifact that you can actually use to make decisions about whether you're going to release resources to a given person or not, and that it just doesn't quite translate now into a more complex and distributed systems world. So it might have its place serving, say, a repository system internally, but it's when you try to marry it up with the things that system is going to have to integrate with, and if they're using a similar approach, that it becomes difficult, apparently. It may be that this is not a problem with Xacmol per se, but with the way in which people have been too ambitious with what they've tried to do. I don't know.
Right, because if people are trying to do things in different ways, that's going to be hard to marry up in any technology.
Yeah.
So was there any scope for maybe having a Xacmol profile, a kind of on-point cordial of access controllers between repositories?
But what would be on the other side? That's the question. I mean, certainly repository people could agree this, but it's the things they're then dealing with. So if you look at, for example, IMS Enterprise, which was created to simply move users and groups around between e-learning systems and other things, and that's been implemented here and there, and certainly I've done this, but it's astonishingly simple. I mean, it's the only reason it works at all, I think, is because although it sounds very grand, it's the simplest standard of all really to learn, and it just gives you that very straightforward ability to move descriptions of groups of students, for example, from a student record system to your VLE. But that took years to really get going and get implemented. And I think that, frankly, we see a track record, really, of the standards which are constrained to the point that they're very simple are the ones which are seeming to work. I think Zacamal is, in a sense, the opposite. It allows you to do absolutely anything. And you can do very clever things with it, but if you're going to build the profile that you're going to use to integrate repositories with other university or institutional systems, for example, then you're going to have to find an agreement with the people that make finance systems and student record systems and whatever it is that you want to integrate with it. At the very least, your directory system that controls local access control, for example. And that's going to be quite hard to do, I would imagine. So I'm not sure if this isn't one of those things that's just going to rumble on for a really long time, and eventually a sort of whole series of just tacit best practices will emerge, and people will gradually just adopt those. I can't see a standard approach to doing this, frankly. But maybe I just don't have the imagination.
So the VLE community have come up a couple of times as kind of having had to tackle with some of these issues before now. I was wondering, are there any other communities that we should be looking at that have had to deal with these issues and might be able to learn from without making the mistakes again and going through all the same pain?
I think definitely the VLE community, because they're in our sector. They've gone through this relatively recently, so the technologies are not too dissimilar, and some of the problems are the same. I, for one, can't think of any other systems in our particular domain. If we look outside and look at what's being proposed for various Web 2 services, for example, I mentioned OAuth. I don't know if anyone's looked at that. OAuth.net, but it's an attempt to do the sort of devolved API negotiation where you log into one system which relies on another system in which you have an account to collaborate and produce some application for you. And it looks like there's some promise there. They've got a number of fairly big players involved. So it might be that we need to take a leaf out of some more remote books than just our own domain.
Okay, I'm not really an expert in the identity field, as probably come across. I was wondering if any of you had any other standards that we should be looking at on Krieg or considering and how they fit in that haven't been mentioned today? No?
I don't know.
Okay, thanks. Are there any other issues people want to bring up, want to talk about? Well, in that case, I'll thank you all very much for your contributions, and I'll wish you good afternoon.
Thank you for listening to this Krieg podcast. To hear more Krieg podcasts, please use your favorite search engine to search for the tags Krieg and podcast. Cheers.